So, friends, coming to the talk for today, that is yoga and meditation. Nowadays, we all know that around us there's a lot of talk about yoga, especially in the West, and there is a lot of importance being given to yoga, both in India and the West. The word yoga is also synonymous, it seems, by most of the people by various terms like meditation and terms like cosmic consciousness, mystic experience, out-of-body experience, kundalini, pranayama, and other breathing exercises associated with it. There are many people in the West and in India today, and even in the East Asian countries in today's date, which are self-proclaimed gurus and so-called experts in meditation techniques. In China, there are a lot of other meditation techniques which are prevalent, which are also related with something known as the practice of qi. Qi is also known in various other languages as prana, chi, or rua. And all these so-called gurus and practitioners, they claim to teach meditation and yoga, and they also guarantee wonderful results. There are also certain schools of Indian origin and origin from East, which claim that if you do certain yogic postures and certain yogic trainings, you can levitate. And there are various examples and various recordings which are there in which people have done levitation with yogic techniques. So, if we see around us, we also see that it's become a sort of a fashion, like people say, the youth says, okay, let's go for yoga. Yoga will make us slim. Yoga will make us look good. Yoga will bring agility to the body, flexibility to the body. And there are so many training classes happening. So, definitely an important question comes to our mind that what is yoga and what is meditation and are they same or are they different and how are they related to each other? If we try to check the meaning of yoga as a Sanskrit term, the root lies in the meaning of the word union. So it actually signifies the union of the personal self with the universal self, in brief. Now, when it comes to yoga, we need to also understand what kinds of yogas are there and what are the different types of yoga. So, broadly, we are told that there are two types of yoga. One is Hatha Yoga and other is the Raja Yoga. So, what is the difference between these? In various literatures of Shankaracharya and Patanjali Yoga aphorisms and various writings of HPB and WQJ, we come across various sites and discussions about these forms of yoga, wherein it is mentioned that the Hatha Yoga is a lower form of yoga, and Hatha Yoga is mostly to do with various physical postures. The impact of Hatha Yoga is primarily on the physical body and on the physical realm of man. It is also concerned with various breathing exercises. Whereas, on the other hand, if we refer to the Raja Yoga, it actually elucidates about the spiritual union, which is the union with one's higher self. Now, if we refer to glossary, it is also mentioned that Hatha Yoga is the lower form of yoga which uses only physical means for the purpose of self-development to establish physical health. So here we need to understand, it is clearly mentioned that which uses only physical means and the purpose is self-development. In the light of theosophy, if we further contemplate, there are certain aspects which we need to always keep at the back of our mind, like the teachings of the Sevenfold Man. And if we see from the perspective of Sevenfold Man and compare these two systems, we understand that there is a huge difference. Hatha Yoga on one hand is working in the realm of the physical body, which again we are told is nothing but a temporary illusionary body, and at the same time Raja Yoga is working on the inner man. Shrankacharya in his treatise Aparokshanubhuti mentions that Hatha Yoga was intended for those whose worldly desires are not pacified or uprooted, and strictly speaks against the practice. So if there was such a clear indication by Sri Shankaracharya about not going on the path of Hatha Yoga, then definitely, certainly, there has to be some reason. Let's try to understand those reasons. Before that, we should also understand one key aspect of our life. Every action which we do in our life, on the physical plane per se, has its origin on the mental plane. All the thoughts originate first, and then action originates on the physical plane. So the root of all our actions lies in the mind. In various places, we are again and again taught, we are referred to the importance of right thoughts, the right attitude. Like for example, in the voice, it is mentioned that mind is the great slayer of the real. Again, Bhagavad Gita mentions that mind follows the rambling of senses and leads the soul astray. Similarly, Dhammapada also speaks of the mind, saying, whatever an enemy might do, whatever a foe may do to a foe, an ill-directed mind will do even greater harm, even greater worse harm to the man. And we can apply this and look back in our lives and in the current situations of our life, in a day-to-day situation, that how our mind, if it is disturbed, it impacts not only us but people around us. So what is happening? In fact, there is a vibrational change which comes with the thoughts which we have, and that impacts the environment and us. So a close examination reveals that to know the truth, one has to control the mind, because mind is nothing but an instrument which we are using. So if we were to know, let's say, the planet Mars, if we see planet Mars with our naked eye, we will understand something with our observation, and we note down the observation. Then we take a binocular, we see the planet Mars, we know something, we note the observation. And finally we reach a Hubble telescope or a very powerful telescope, and we note down some observation which will be more detailed. Maybe after 20 years from now, there will be another instrument which will give us more details about planet Mars. But what, these are all relative truths. From this perspective, what is the absolute truth? Now for that we need an instrument which tells us the absolute truth. Similarly, our body, which we have got karmically, our mind, which we have got karmically, these instruments limit us to having the right perception of the absolute truth. So Patanjali, in his Yoga of Aransams, teaches about mind control, and also teaches about concentration and meditation. Patanjali taught in his Yoga Aphorisms, on the contrary, that Hatha Yoga results in psychic development, and this development happens at the expense of and delay of the spiritual development. So it hampers that. Now, how does it hamper is what we need to understand. We can also see that, in fact, we also need to keep in mind that apart from the sevenfold microcosm, sevenfold macrocosm, we also need to keep in mind that this entire universe created for the experience and learning of the soul, and that the physical body and the mind are just one of the instruments to help achieve the same. So from one perspective, if we see that our body is actually a temporary instrument which has been loaned to us by nature during this incarnation, and we are the caretakers of this body. So then our brain is different from our mind, and our mind is different from our soul. So from that perspective, brain becomes the instrument of mind, mind becomes the instrument of soul. In this context, if we see, Hatha Yoga only deals with the physical body, the outer man, and not with the inner man, which Raj Yoga deals with. And Raj Yoga deals with actually purification of the mind. Damodar Ke Mavalankar clearly states that Raj Yoga encourages no sham, requires no physical postures. It deals with the inner man whose sphere lies in the world of thought. To have the highest ideal placed before oneself and strive incessantly to rise up to it. It is only true concentration recognized by the esoteric philosophy which deals with the inner world of noumena and not the outer shell of phenomena. So we see, we have been given a clear hint here, which is, to have the highest ideal placed before oneself and strive incessantly to rise up to it. That is what is Raj Yoga. Now, it has also been advocated by, claimed by the advocates of Hatha Yoga that it provides higher level of consciousness and spiritual powers. But a slight thought and introspection will tell us that how is it possible that one would get higher levels of consciousness and spiritual powers with Hatha Yoga, wherein there is no concentration of mind, there is no purity of mind and heart, there are no virtues, there is no righteousness. How can this mere asanas and pranayam provide you that? So in this context, again and again, the great teachers have mentioned in various literature and scriptures. In fact, in secret doctrine we are told, lead the life necessary for the acquisition of such knowledge, and power and wisdom will come to you naturally. If the very fact is true that we all are one, if the very fact is true that there is nothing known as separateness, then we already are one with knowledge. We already are one with the one source of knowledge. It is only the unfolding of that which has to be done from within. And that is what is referred to here, that how that takes place in a very natural way, by leading the life necessary for acquisition of such knowledge, and power and wisdom will come to you naturally, because it's already there. So, from this perspective, leading of clean life, right thoughts, right attitude, the necessary life, becomes a prerequisite to obtain wisdom, which it leads to wisdom manifesting from within and not obtained from without. So it is not going and doing some postures and giving lot of money to the so-called guru to provide you some kind of powers which will help you. It is not the purification, enhancement of the functioning of the physical body or the personality which leads to union with the divine. In fact, it is the purification of the mind. In Bhagavad Gita, we are given two beautiful and suggestive definitions of yoga, which we should also keep in our mind. The first one talks about equal-mindedness. It says equal-mindedness is yoga. The second one says yoga is the skill in performance of action. From this perspective, we see that yoga is in fact the training of mind and the right performance of action. Now, how do we obtain this? In order to obtain this, we can also see that training of the mind, when it comes to right performance of action, we also need the use of the tool of concentration. And concentration of the mind becomes of prime importance. But even Patanjali in his Yoga Aphorisms mentions about the need of rigorous moral training and cleansing of mind. And this ethical preparation actually needs to be preceded before the actual practice of concentration. So even before getting into concentration or the practice of concentration, we need to be very clear about our motive and at the same time clear about being prepared in terms of moral and ethics and in terms of cleansing of our mind. In the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, this particular preparation before entering into concentration is described under two headings. One is known as Yama and other is known as Niyama. So Yama consists of non-violence, truthfulness, integrity, continence, non-attachment, and whereas Niyama comprises of purity of thought, speech, action, contentment and devotion to Ishvara. So this is the foundation of the devotee or the disciple or the aspirant who wants to enter on the path of concentration. Now there has to be some reason why this is the prerequisite, why there is so much emphasis given on purification of the mind. So if we see a close examination of these shows that unless these paramitas and the virtues are developed at least to a certain acceptable extent, the practice of concentration cannot be entered without risk. So what is this risk? It is like giving a child a knife which is very sharp or fire to play with. The child will hurt themselves. Similarly, getting into these practices without actually being fully prepared will harm us. The practice of concentration actually cannot be entered without risk, for the dangers of the lower iddhis which are referred in the first verse of voice are in fact very real. And we are also told in Bhagavad Gita that seek this wisdom by doing service, by strong search, by question and humility. So in fact there is a full, well-defined, well-organized roadmap which is given step by step which we need to follow. And WQJ mentions very clearly, knowledge must be carefully obtained with a pure motive. Similarly, HPB in her book Practical Occultism mentions that it is motive and motive alone which makes any exercise of power become black, malignant or white and beneficent magic. So we see deep down it is the propelling force. We know that behind will there is desire, and we need to be very clear what is the motive. So we need to be very careful that why is it that we ask this question? Why is it that we want to know more about yoga or meditation? Is it that we want to look good because something will happen to us? Is it because we'll get some powers? Is it because we'll prove to our colleagues, friends, neighbors, family that we are different, higher and special and more evolved from them? What is the motive? Or is it just mere curiosity? Or is it a very subtle level of sense of accomplishment that, oh, I have learned some spiritual secrets and I am better than my fellow men? So we need to be very careful from the very beginning and examine our motive and constantly keep a vigil. And this vigil has to be kept always, not just at the initial stage or in the middle stage, always throughout. And we need to test our motive countless times, again and yet again and yet again. So we need to be very clear that why it is that we need to learn yoga. Now, here is where we need to also realize the great truth which has been told to us again and again, that we all are one and there is no separateness on the plane of absolute truth. So how, why is this required? The how comes is by every situation of our life. Life being a teacher provides us opportunity in every situation, wherein every situation if we use to learn and validate, we have been told this truth that we all are one. Using situations in life, we need to evaluate and validate that how and why we are one. And then we also need to evaluate that all our actions needs to be in accordance with the all. So that is where this selfishness will dissipate from our system and we will harmonize with the all. So even a small, to a very small extent, if we work on these lines, it will purify our thoughts and our actions, and our motive will no longer be selfish, rather will be for the benefit of all. So in fact, in every moment of our life, if we are mindful and practicing from this angle, indirectly it will be purifying our thoughts, and indirectly it will be preparing ourselves for this prerequisite of meditation and concentration. We need to also keep in our mind that our life is a holy pilgrimage. And if our life is a holy pilgrimage, then how is it that we go on this journey, which is a sacred journey, which at the end leads to the union of the divine with not a clean heart? So how can we go on this journey without a clean heart is something which we need to think about. W.T.J. says, no earnest one who feels himself absolutely called to work persistently on the highest planes, if development for the good of humanity and not for his own, need fear what the heaven or hell holds. So if the motive is clear, if the mind is purified, if we are in harmony with the all, there is no fear, whatever situation may come in life. The book 2 of Patanjali Yoga Aphorisms is entitled Means of Concentration. And herein we are introduced to various afflictions or vrittis which arise in the mind of the student who is actually seriously working on the path of concentration or dhyana. Now, what are these vrittis or modifications of the mind? We are told that these are 5 in number, and they are ignorance, egoism, desire, aversion, and a tenacious wish to exist on earth, that is tanha. So ignorance, we all know, it's avidya. It is not knowing the true nature of things. and egoism is actually rooted in the sense of separateness, in fact the delusion of separateness. Desire is actually dwelling on pleasures, whereas aversion is dwelling on pain. Sri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita clearly mentions, to overcome desire and aversion, one has to resign oneself to Supreme, and clearly emphasizes on freedom from attachment to the fruits of action and development of spiritual discernment. So, coming back to yoga aphorisms, means of concentration, we are told afflictions, which are five which we discussed. And Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna guides us about resigning oneself to the Supreme, emphasis on freedom from attachment of fruits of action, and development of spiritual discernment. So these three things will help us avoid these vrittis of mind and will bring a harmonious state of our mind. In the notes to Bhagavad Gita, WQJ mentions regarding this that we must cultivate a complete resignation to the law. Now we know about the three fundamental propositions, God, law and being, and how law is in fact everything, and God is linked with law is linked with being, and being is linked with God, and it is three in one and one in three. So in fact the expression and operation of law is everywhere, in everything, in every circumstances of life, and even the ebb and flow of our inner being, and it also works on various planes of our inner being. So we are mentioned that we need to develop mindfulness and be vigilant at all times. The last one is the tenacious wish to exist on earth, which is tanha. Now tanha becomes a root cause for reincarnation and repeated incarnations. Now coming to the question of meditation, till now we were discussing about yoga, types of yoga, and what Patanjali has mentioned on a very high level in his yoga aphorisms. Now coming to the question of meditation, what exactly is meditation? In the 5 years of theosophy, the article Elixir on Life, it gives us some of the reasons and some of the meanings about meditation, wherein meditation is defined clearly as the cessation of active external thought, and concentration is the entire life tendency to a given end. So we are told that meditation is the inexpressible yearning of the inner man. Meditation is inexpressible, which cannot be expressed, yearning of the inner man to go out towards the infinite. It is said that there was no synonym or word in the European languages and that is why it has been made to believe that it is similar to prayer, glorification or repentance. So again, meditation is the inexpressible yearning of the inner man to go towards the infinite. Certainly then, if you think from this perspective, it is quite natural that if the inner man, in fact everything, has come from that one source, which is the unknown, unknowable, the infinite, unspeakable, unthinkable, then that source is like the parent of all of us. And there has to be an impulse inherent which actually leads us back to that source. So So a careful thought shows us that unless we have a clear, true, strong feeling and yearning, we may find that it is only our lower self or only our personality which is looking for some curiosity to be satisfied, or looking for some answers, or the lower mind is just playing some games. W.Q.J. in his article Meditation and Concentration talks about two different types of meditations. The first is the meditation which is practiced at a set time. So it could be morning, evening, whenever, some set time. And the second is the meditation of the entire lifetime. So in this, we clearly see that there are the both sorts of meditation, a particular time and the entire lifetime, actually makes use of, again, law of the cycles. So if you were to do meditation on the same time, or if you were to continue doing meditation throughout every moment of our life, it would create cyclic impressions, and every time it would become a stronger impulse and yet a stronger impulse. So the meditation of a lifetime will lead to manifestation of the effect of the mental deposits made during the life to ensure upon obtaining appropriate kind of body and appropriate kind of mental frame and situation and environment. This is the kind of subtle thread of life meditation which we need to practice every second, every moment of our life. So there is a tremendous amount of responsibility and opportunity which is given to us every moment of our life, wherein we can use this meditation as a tool which can help us to create the right kind of mental deposit, which will provide us the right kind of instrument, opportunity and environment and constitution for our next life. And cyclically, each life, the impulse will get stronger and stronger and stronger. Further, W.Q.J. guides us, saying that that if we do all our acts, small or big, every moment for the sake of whole humanity, as representing the Supreme Self, then every cell and fiber of our body and inner man will be turned in one direction. That is, every aspect of our body, because if we see our body is made of many small bodies. And here we are just talking about the physical body. What about the other six bodies? And all those six bodies have their own constituents. So every cell of all planes of our all bodies, and every fiber and the inner man itself, will be all attuned and harmonized and turned to one direction, and is perfect concentration, which is also mentioned in New Testament. If the eye is single, then the whole body will be full of light. So, as we discussed prior to this, it becomes quite clear that before meditation can be practiced, it is quite eminent that we achieve a certain degree of concentration. So we are in this way also told in Bhagavad Gita by Shri Krishna that this divine discipline is not attained by the man who eateth more than enough or too little, nor by him who has habit of sleeping much, nor by him who is given to overwatching. The meditation which destroyeth pain is produced in him who is moderate in eating and in recreation, of moderate exertion in actions, and regulated in sleep and waking. So we are again told another aspect, that there has to be discipline, and that discipline has to be on all the planes of our existence. And this is the divine discipline which needs to be attained. And we see in this way that we need to actually harmonize and attune our whole life, each and every aspect of our life. So each and every aspect of our life needs to be scrutinized, each and every aspect of our life needs to be harmonized, and then we need to be, as already discussed, be always on guard and have to take charge of every aspect of our life to practice this divine discipline. Going further on these lines, we are told that we should center and focus our heart in the true self, and like we discussed, we need to be exempt of all desires and attachments. A very helpful hint has been provided to us by WQJ, wherein he says there is advice given by many wise ones and many adepts. It is said that every day and as often as you can, and on going to sleep and you awake, think on the truth that you are not body, brain or astral man, but that you are that, and that is Supreme Soul. For by this practice you will gradually kill the false notion which lurks inside that the false is true and the true is false. So again, if we see, it's a very clear guidance which we have been given, which actually leads us to realize that we are all one, and at the same time we are that, and it leads us to purification of the mind. Now Patanjali, coming back to concentration about mind, talks about how there are modifications of thinking principles which we discussed. We all know that if we sit for a moment and try to concentrate on a particular topic, whatever topic we take, there will be thousands of thoughts coming to our mind, and we will not be able to focus or concentrate our mind on any one thought. In fact, our concentration will diffuse. So what is happening here? We know that in fact wherever our mind is focused, it becomes that, because mind is of the nature of water. So in whatever container you put water, it takes that shape. So wherever the mind is focused, it becomes that, it takes that shape. And also we need to understand that, like we said, that brain is nothing but the instrument of mind, and these are two different things. And the mind uses the brain as its instrument, like in turn the soul uses the mind. So Patanjali says that at the time of concentration, that when we try to sit down and we concentrate, when there are a lot of thoughts disturbing us, at the time of concentration, if concentration is achieved, the soul abides in the state of spectator without the spectacle. And we need to understand that this is a very important aspect, since it points to a state of conscious awareness and not blankness. So during that moment, it's conscious awareness and it's not blankness. That is, we are consciously aware. And who are we? We are not this body. We are not this brain. We are not this mind. So hence we need to understand the modifications of mind and control the same. Now, we also need to look upon another aspect, which is the correct attitude towards life, which we have already discussed, which is about, which like the voice says, to live to benefit mankind is the first step. Now, this is the attitude which we should have. Patanjali also mentions about concentration and meditation that mind during the act of concentrated meditation becomes that on which it dwells. Now if our mind, when focused on a particular seed thought, becomes that, then it is quite logical that we need to concentrate on the highest possible seed thought. Now, how will we know the highest possible sweet thought? Each one of us, based on our own understanding and karmic limitations and knowledge, will be able to have the highest possible sweet thought for themselves. And then we need to concentrate over it until the mind harmonizes with it and becomes. And this is also known as the argumentative condition. After this argumentative condition, it is said that when the object of concentration itself is disappeared from the mind, it comes to a state of non-argumentative condition. In fact, what happens is that the object itself doesn't remain. How do we understand that? In voice, it is stated that thou hast to feel thyself all thought and yet exile all thoughts from out of thy soul. So, in this way we can understand that, in fact we learn that to reach the non-deliberative mental state, that is, we attain clear knowledge, fear from error, there has to be no train of the self-reproductive thoughts. So beyond this state, which is known as meditation with a seed, which we just discussed, there is a higher state where the seed thought, there is no seed thought which is present. The mind souls goes beyond the need for a seed thought, and the abstract state is achieved, and the recognition of object or subject ceases, and the mind grasps the essence and becomes that. So, like we are told in Mandukya Upanishad also about the object of perception and the perceiver, and we are also told about it in Bhagavad Gita. So at this particular state, it is observed that neither the seed thought is there, neither the object is there, nor the observer is there. So what happens? It is a state in which the mind grasps the root essence and in fact becomes that. In a very important scripture known as the Diamond Sutra, Lord Buddha's disciple Subhuti makes one comment. He says that it is the absolute which exalts the Holy One. So from this perspective, if we see that it is meditation on the highest that one is able to imagine is the only effective way for reaching spiritual knowledge. Now in this context, HPB has given us a very important guidance, and we should keep that at the back of our mind always. She has mentioned, as one progresses on the Jnana Yoga, one finds conceptions arising which, though one is conscious of them, one cannot express nor yet formulate into any sort of mental picture. As the time goes on, these conceptions will form into mental picture. This is a time to be on guard and refuse to be deluded with the idea that the new found wonderful picture must represent reality. It does not. And as one works on, one finds the once adored picture growing dull and unsatisfying and finally fading or being thrown away. This is another danger point, because for the moment one is left with a void without any conception to support one, and one may be tempted to revive the cast of picture for want of better to cling to. The true student will, however, work on unconcerned and Presently further formless gleams come, which again in time give rise to larger and more beautiful picture than the last one. But the learner will now know that no picture will ever represent the truth. This last splendid picture will grow dull and fade like the others. And so the process goes on and on until as last the mind and its pictures are transcended and the learner enters and dwells in the world of no form or arupa, but which all forms are narrowed reflections. So we need to again and again think on this guidance which SPV has provided, and it is so wonderfully put here, wherein it elucidates about each state and each passing phase, each frame, and until the disciple, the student leads to a point and dwells in the center of no form. And we are also told that all forms are narrowed reflections of that one form, which is no form. Now, this provides us a very specific guidance on meditation and concentration as provided by Patanjali in the Yoga Aphorisms on a higher level. Again, we need to further read, dwell, understand and meditate on meditation on the Yoga Aphorisms provided by Patanjali. Also, it provides us very clear guidance and warning against the practices of Hatha Yoga and how it impacts the progress and the actual spiritual development. In fact, from all this discussion, if we contemplate further, realize that there has been a lot of emphasis on purification of thought, purification of mind, ethics, morals, leading a good life, understanding the true meaning of oneness. Now, if we see our constitution, we will realize that the manas or the mind is actually either tainted by the desire or either tainted by the higher, the buddhi. So if it were to be looking towards buddhi and tainted by buddhi, the entire man, the inner man, will be geared towards looking towards the supreme, the divinity. Or else if it is looking towards the desire body, it will be focused on the material world. That is what happens in Hatha Yoga. And in Hatha Yoga, we are actually enhancing our karmic and desire body. And there is stagnation of spiritual growth. And on the other hand, in Raja Yoga, there is stagnation of the lower man, wherein there is development of the inner man. Now, a closing thought we'll take from a master of wisdom, wherein it is mentioned, the process of self-purification is not the work of a moment, nor few months, but of years, nay, extending over a series of lives. The later a man begins the living of a higher life, the longer must be his period of probation, for he has to undo the effects of a longer number of years spent in objects diagrammatically opposite to the real goal. The real strenuous one's efforts and brighter the results of his work, the nearer he comes, the more strenuous one's efforts and brighter the results of his work, the nearer he comes to the threshold. If his aspiration is genuine, a settled conviction, and not a sentimental flash of the moment, he transfers from one body to another the determination which finally leads him to the attainment of his desire.